In the sense of Chadesh Amenu Kekedem, somehow, Rabbi Kahn, our Kedem cannot be the same without you. In our early days, Chadesh Amenu Kekedem, when Matan was starting, the wonderful Shiurim that you honored us with and gave us, many of the Talmidot of yours are here, your community. It's a great honor and privilege. If this person, it's a special individual who can get us to reflect, get us on this special day of reflection, of thinking, of tshuva, of mourning. We really await eagerly to hear your words of chizuk, of hitorurut. Thank you so much for joining us, for coming. And we know it's even a little bit harder in this time. Thank you also for joining. His wife came to be with us. And
thank you. You shouldn't think my wife as an afterthought or my mother as an afterthought, because that's the reason I taught here to begin with. Okay. There are many difficulties and many challenges dealing with Tisha B'Av. And obviously the emotional burden of dealing with such an enormous national destruction. And it's not just a national destruction which takes place once, it's a national destruction which reverberates over the generations time after time. And the truth is, we really don't have enough emotional and intellectual bandwidth to be dealing with the entire enormity of what we need to face. And on top of that, if that weren't difficult enough, the problem is compounded that when we read the keynote, and I wasn't here to hear what I assume wonderful interpretations, but keynote necessitate interpretations because the language is so challenging. And it's not just the ideas which are difficult for us to take, it's the language which is used as poetic language. And the truth is, maybe we're better off with the poetic language, and we're better off not understanding everything which was said, which goes back to my first point in terms of having enough bandwidth to deal with all of it. And just when you think you had enough with the Churban, then they start getting to the Middle Ages and what happened during the Crusades. And if that's not enough, then we throw in the Holocaust afterwards, and how in the world can a mind or a heart take all of that at once. So what I want to do is I want to address one particular theme, and the theme is one which I think all of us will have noticed in a general sense. Maybe some of us would have noted a little bit more of the theme, although I have my suspicions that understanding the full depth of it is one which is quite elusive, and I'm not beginning to claim that we're going to get to the full depth of it. But let's begin with one of the keynotes. One of the keynote that we said this morning, one of the first ones, which was keynote number 9, Eicha Tiferti. And right there, those two words already were giving us a kind of a message that we did not necessarily understand when we read those two words. Eicha Tiferti. Eicha Tiferti mi rashotai hishlichu, ukneged kisei kavod selim himlichu, bechalit nai asher chozai nimlachu, Vinom im bechoktai telechu. Now, if you go through this entire kina, you'll find that, again, various levels of really of brilliance are being expressed over here, but there's one which is the blatant theme, and that is kind of a running comparison between Eicha and between Parashat Bechukotai, which is a tochacha. And the message, even if you don't understand anything further than that, is that everything which is played out in Eicha, everything which is played out during the destruction, was actually not just predicted, but it was warned at the end of Sefer Vayikra in the Tochacha. That's the obvious meaning of, again, that even that first part, but it goes all the way through. And it keeps on bringing elements from Eicha and then going back to Vayikra, going back to the Tochacha. You were warned. This was predicted. This was promised. Of course, this happened. But I'm going to avoid the actual content and stay much more on the form today. Because those first two words are very deliberate. Eicha Tiferti, and the reason they were deliberate is because it's the first letter of the alphabet and the last letter of the alphabet. Aleph to Taf. And then, at the end, going to the Tochacha, it's not an accident, Im Bechuktai, Teilechu. that the words which are taken also start with Aleph, and then the last word there is with a Taf. There's a message to this. And as I said, that is, the, in a sense, the easy part, and maybe something which we all would have noted in passing. We're strict not to listen to music during the 9 days. They say the halacha really is music you would dance to, and I saw some of you were getting very tempted just now. And I think all of us noted that as reading Eicha, there is this following of the alphabet. It's going really Aleph to Taf. And there are, as I said, very, very simple messages to that. But we understand things on a deeper level right now. And that deeper level is that there was already a precedent. And the precedent already was the warning. And the warning already took place in Vayikra. Which means before we entered into the land of Israel, and let's keep in mind, we really were supposed to enter into the land of Israel by the end of Sefer Vayikra. The 40 years wandering around the desert were not part of the plan. We're warned right then at the end of Vayikra, because that really should be the next step. And we're warned about how our stay will last, and the message there really is this type of a Aleph to Taf, or if you will, an A to Z kind of message. So let's jump to source number 15. And it's Vayikra Rabbah, it's the Medrash, or the Midrash, on Parshat Bechukotai. Rav Menachem Chatnei D'Rebbe Elazar Bar Avina Amar, Chishavti Ma Shekatavta Lanu B'Torah. I've noticed, I've made an analysis, I've thought about that which you've written the Torah. Im Bechukotai Telechu, Umaktiv Taman, what does it say afterwards? V'natati Shalom Ba'aretz. So if we follow the rules of God, there'll be peace. V'im lo tishma'u limaktiv taman. But if we don't follow God, what is it written then? V'yasafti liyasra etchem. Now notice in the v'yasafti liyasra, and I know that for some of us, you know, we don't relate to gematria, and we don't relate to letters, but what can I do? That's what the Midrash wants us to see. V'yasafti starts with a vav, and liyasra ends with a hey. So just, I made it a little bolder, maybe you can see it, etchem. Rabbi Abba Breidu Rabbi Chia B'Shem Rabbi Yonatan Amar, Chishavti Brachot, Chishavti Klalot. I made an analysis of the blessings and the curses. Brachot me Aleph Ad Taf, that God wanted to bless us from A to Z, with all the letters, with all every possible combination of every possible blessing. And this should be obvious to us. This is what we want to do. Any of us who are parents, this is what we want to do for our children. We want to bless them as much as we can. We want to give them everything we have. And sometimes if we even have desire for more than we have, it's because we want to give more than we have. So the blessings are from Aleph to Taf. Klalot, but the curses, he notes, Mivav ad Hei. And now you know exactly why he said the Vav to the Hei. Aleph to Taf is easy for us to understand. What does it mean for Vav to Hey? That's a little bit more elusive. I will say one thing about the Vav, because the letter Vav is a connecting letter. It's a connecting letter because it's something Vih, right, and something else. So it always connects. The Vav is a connection. In the building of the Mishkan, some of you perhaps remember the Vavim, all of the connectors that take place. The Vavs connect. So it seems to be the blessings of Aleph to Taf complete. And the curses from the Vav to the Hey, and the other thing that you note of the Vav to the Hey, is that they're inverted. That something is not the way it's supposed to be. The way the things are supposed to be is Aleph to Taf, and Aleph to Taf in giving everything, all the blessings, all the bounty, all the good. V'lo od, ela shehin hafuchot. The Vav and the Hey are backwards. Amar Rabbi Avin, im zechiten, areni hofech lachem klalot lebrachot. But if you're fortunate, I will turn around those curses and turn them into blessings. Eimatai kishetishmeru torati, haduhu dichtiv im bechukotai telechu. And the truth is, there's something really beautiful over here, because it begins with all the blessings and then it leads into the curses, but it tells us that those blessings are awaiting us, because we can turn things around. And maybe that's the most important message of what we're going to get to today, that no matter what the situation is, they always can be turned around. And somehow the turning around of those curses of the hey and the vav, or the vav and the hey, will get turned out to the entire alphabet and giving all these blessings. Now, I hope things that I said till this point made at least a little sense. Let's now go back to what I thought was the beginning. If you read through the first chapter of Eicha, you probably would have noticed or should have noticed You say things like that just to make people feel inadequate, but you should have noticed that the whole thing was in alphabetical order, Aleph to Taf. And actually, if you paid attention, you probably would have noticed it also in the second chapter, and the third chapter, and the fourth chapter, but not the fifth chapter. However, there's a problem. If you look in the middle, sourced one, the middle of the first chapter, we're up to Samach, Sila kol Abirav, Posek Tet Zayin, Al Eila ani bochia, Eini Eini. Notice the Ayin then goes, and it's not just the alliteration from the Ayin, it goes on to the, my eyes, they're crying, Yerdomayim. And then Posek Yud Zayin goes to the Pei, Samach Ayin Pei. When we go to the second chapter, the sequence has been lost. Samech safku, and then Pasuk Tet Zayin, potsu alaych pihem, and the ayin was skipped. Asa Hashem asher zamam. And this problem in the second chapter, why the letters were turned around, is what we're going to deal with today. In the second chapter, the translation of the verses, all your enemies have opened their mouths. That's very interesting. We're going to come back to the significance of the ayin and the pei. But let's just note this before we go any further. Ayin and pei are two letters in the Hebrew alphabet. Ayin means eyes. Pe means mouth. And part of what has been inverted over here are the eyes and the mouth. What exactly that means? Give me a little bit of time, but the terrible verse in chapter 2 means all your enemies have opened their mouths against you. They whistle and they gnash their teeth. They say, we've devoured you. Indeed, this is the day we hoped for. We have found it. We have seen it. Such anticipation, such happiness, such joy, such celebration. The day has finally arrived. But what day is that? We know what the day is. The day is the temple's been destroyed. We've been waiting, and now they can open their mouths and sing in song. Now, we didn't realize necessarily as we were reading that verse that the use of the pei, which is inverted, because the ayin should have been there first, and now the pei has been inverted, instead of the Beit HaMikdash being a place where the Kohanim do their service and the Levim sing and Am Yisrael get close to God, everything's been inverted. We are silent. We are crying. And instead, the mouths of our enemies are celebrating in joy and song. So something we realize is completely wrong about this. When we move on to in source number 3, to Perek Gimel, we see again the same phenomena. Over here, there is more than one string of letters. There's multiple ones. Pasuk Mem Vav, Patsu Eilenu Pihem Kol Eivenu. Our enemies have all opened up their mouths against us. Palgu Mayim Tered Eini. Again, over here, our eyes, and it's interesting, this is still a pei verse, but our eyes are again filled with tears. And after this, in Pasuk Memtet and Pasuk Nun Aleph, Eini Nigra, Eini Olala, and so on. And then it gets back to the proper sequence, Tzitzadi. This was obviously noted by Chazal. In source number 4, Patsu Alayach Pihem, Hikdim Pei La'ayin. The pei precedes the ayin. Lefi Shahayu Omrim Befihem, because they said with their mouths that which their eyes did not see, which means what Eicha reflects is a mistake which has taken place actually long ago, and the sequence of seeing versus speaking was lost. Instead, it was first speaking and then seeing. Living in a generation of what they call today fake news, I don't know about you, I barely read newspapers anymore. I barely watch news, listen to news, because there's always this thought, what can you trust? It's only when you hear something from someone, a trusted source, that things change significantly. I read an article, so how things get filtered and what we know and so on, but sometimes, and unfortunately more often than not, what we have first is the peh, and then the ayin afterwards, and that kind of changes everything. It's not just prejudice. It's far worse than prejudice. What it actually is untruth. Because changing the sequence actually creates lies. And lies which are created then make our lives almost, I'm not going to say impossible to live with, but we have an incredible challenge. Because life is hard enough knowing what's true and facing the things we need to face and the struggles we need to struggle with. But when we're faced with situations where the things we're taking in are not even true, then it just makes our challenge that much more difficult. Years ago, when my parents asked me, so why are you moving to Israel? And they were great Zionists. But they ask, why now? That's the question, why now? So this was a long time ago. This was they asked me this in August of 1984. And I said something to the effect that I want to be there. I want to be a part of it. God has arranged things, put things in order. And I don't want to watch it misreported on CNN. I'd rather be here and do it than watch it And you can add the BBC if that makes you happy, or whatever other outlets it is. You can all fill in the blanks right now, unfortunately. What is this referring to? The Gemara, source number 5, goes into a little bit more detail about this. And I'm actually going to go into slightly before the source in number 5. That's Kuf Dalet Amud Bet. It actually begins on Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph, a series of Gemarot, all talking about the same theme. It starts off, and again, this you don't have yet in front of you, Eicha Yeshva Badad. It starts talking about Eicha. And it says, notice, Amar of Yochanan, Ne'mal Laku Yisrael Be'Eicha. Why was Eicha the word which was used? And there's many Midrashim that express an idea behind this. And it counts the numbers. The Gematria, Eicha, 1 and 10 and 20 and 5 equals 36. They broke the 36 sins which are Chayiv Karet. Karet means disconnection with God. B'bnei she'avru al kol, or al shloshim v'sheish kretot shebitorah. When you're guilty of karet, you become disconnected. And that's the first approach of the Gemara. It continues, and one of them says, why is it? Am Rabbi Yochanan, b'bnei she'laku ba'alef bet. B'bnei she'avru al torah she'nitna ba'alef bet. They were struck with Aleph Bet, and that's the Eicha, because they went against the Aleph Bet. So all of this was a couple of lines before the Gemara that we get to in front of us in source number 5. And now it's the next page. Patsu alayach pihim, amarava marv yochanan bishvil mahikdim pe la'ayin. And it goes back to tell us exactly what it was referring to. Bishvil miraglim, sha'amru bifihim, mashalo ra'u be'inehim. The miraglim already had a narrative before they went, and then they told us what their narrative is, ignoring what their eyes had actually see. Which means, again, their words and what they saw are inverted. First the narrative, first the peh, and then the ayin. Now these two letters, peh and ayin, are far more important than I'm letting on right now. Ayin is how we study Torah Shebichtav, it's seeing the words. Peh is Torah Shebaal Peh. Which means these two letters are not just any two letters. These two letters are going to come up. They're going to emerge in all kinds of places in Jewish thought because there is a lot more to this. The pei and the ayin are essential, and the pei and the ayin are inverted. And that's so far what we've learned over here. Rashi tells us in source number 6, Ma'akdim pei la'ayin b'rov ha'alphabeta sheba'echa. In most of the instances where the alphabet is used, the Aleph Bet is used in Eicha, in almost all of them, the exception is the first chapter, in almost all of them, we have an inversion of Ayin and Pei, which means we have a false narrative that we're living with, which means we're living lives of lies. If there is a lie, then how could, again, if in our mind, the base for what we believe is a lie, then how could we possibly fix it? Because we don't even know when the lie exists sometimes. Which means this idea of the pain ayin, this idea of the false narrative, this idea of the lack of truth, comes to the very core of who we are. And yes, it metastasized in a particularly violent way in the sin of the spies, which caused such incredible damage to the Jewish people. Because the people there are sitting and they're crying and God hates us and he took us out to kill us. Again, what kind of a perverse sense of Jewish history is this? I mean, we're all smarter than that. Every single person should have known there was a thing called the Brit Beinah Batarim. Every single person should have known that God promised to Avraham, that this is your land. This is the land we're coming back to. Yes, there was a detour to Egypt, and we're going to leave Egypt. We're going to come back. How in the world can somebody now create a new narrative? Oh, God hates us. Terrible place. Let's go where? What exactly was the alternative? Where are we going now? What kind of understanding of Jewish history can take someone to the understanding that we're supposed to end up in Nairobi? There's something wrong with that. It's a false narrative. That's the whole thing. It's a lie. There's a narrative, and then you fit it. Yeah, this is a terrible place. You know what? It's a challenging place. and it's a place which is worth the challenge. And sometimes it's very hard to say, but it's worth the challenge. It's our destiny. It's this shidduch that God made before creation, the Jewish people and the land of Israel. And anybody who doesn't understand that, they're lacking something which is just so profound. Rashi continues in Surah 6, Mipnei Meraglim, Shekdimu ma'amar pihim ad shelo ra'u ba'ayin. They created their narrative before they saw anything. They knew what they were going to say before they got there. And what we have in Eicha is a reflection of the false narrative of the pe and the ayin being messed up. Now, everything I've just now have said is true, but is superficial, because it's much deeper. And I'm just going to say very quickly, just for sense of some type of completion, and not do more than I need to about this. The power of the alphabet, the alephbet, is discussed equally in Kabbalistic sources and in legal sources. You know, all of you may know in the back of your mind some Hasidic story about some kid who didn't know how to daven, or some person didn't know how to daven, just said the alephbet, and told by whoever is the Rebbe in the story, you can say the Baal Shem Tov, says that this is the most profound prayer. By the way, I'm going to end with the story of the Baal Shem Tov. He whistled. They got to you also, right? You grew up in a place full of Hasidim. Okay. He whistled. No, but there's another story that he says the alphabet. Says the alphabet and puts together and says the alphabet, puts it back, God will put everything in the right sequence, and this will and this works, because God asked what goes on the intention. Tefillah is avodah shebalev, and the avodah shebalev was pure. So okay, so you don't know the words. I'll tell you something, if we have time, that I heard from Rabbi Soloveitchik, and then I had to go searching to find it, because we'll leave it. It's another story along those same lines. But first, the Kabbalistic side of things. In source number 7, the Sefer Yetzirah, the Book of Creation, it talks of something which is called 10 Sefirot, and it talks of something called the 22 letters, and it says that's how God creates. But what I'll read the words, then I'll explain it a little bit. B'shloshim v'shtayim netivot pliot chachama chakka Hashem tzvakot Elokei Yisrael Elokim chayim u'melech olam kel shakai rachum v'chanun ram v'nisa shochein ad marom v'kadosh shemo barat olamo b'shlosha sfarim b'sefer bet eses sfirot blima v'esrim v'shtayim otiyot. It says the building blocks of creation are these things called the sefirot, and is the letters. The reason for this, I said I need to explain this a little bit. The reason for this is that if you look in Pirkei Avot, it says that God creates based upon speech. In 10 utterances, God created the world. But if you count, you only find 9 utterances. It says Bereshit is one of those utterances as well. Creation takes place through speech, which means in order to create a world, God needed to create speech. In order to create speech, God needed to create language. Language is made up of words, sentences. Words are made up of letters. So therefore, the very start of creation, which will be by speech, necessitates the creating of language. God doesn't need language. God doesn't need this way to create like we do. But once God created via speech, and man is the image of God, and part of the image of God that we have is our ability to speak, we then should realize that our speech can be incredibly creative and also can be incredibly destructive. We can destroy a human being with our speech, and we can lift a human being to places they never imagined with a word as well. Our power of speech is incredible, and it's because we're in the image of God, but it's because God created with speech. Which means these letters, these 22 letters, are seen by the Sefer Yetzirah as literally the building blocks of creation. The whole story or legends of the golem are all connected with this ability to create via speech, and some of it is based on commentaries by this and the Sefer Yetzirah. As I said, there's a whole mystical side to this. On the other hand, a very surprising halacha. The halacha is in source 11 and 12, and it is in the laws of vows, in Yoredeah. If I make a vow and I swear to do something or not to do something, I won't eat this, I will eat this, I will do this, I won't do this, I'll give this. All vows have power, but you realize the power of vows take place because of words. Vows are based upon words, use of words, use of language. In source number 12, the Beit Yosef quotes a Tshuva Tarajba. Tshuva Rabbeinu Hai, going back al mi shenatal sefer tachnunim v'tfilot v'shar kitvei kodesh v'nishba ba'oto sefer shvu'azu kishvo sefer torahi. For sefer tfilot yesh bo shemot ha'kodesh baruch hu u'psukim v'lo od elakivin shekutim bo kol otiyot sheba alef bet hari mitstarf from the kama shemot to the kama gufei torah. The Beit Yosef says, if you take a book, but I want to be a little bit clearer before I explain this. If you look at source 12, Misha Nishba B'Shamayim, now I'm going to skip to the Ramah, which is a couple of lines down, three lines to the bottom of source 12, Haga. V'koza shelo natal b'yadov, im natal b'yadov, katava shirit, afilo eino rak chachma chitzonit o aleph bet, she'ein barak otiyot, in mishba behem behem b'yado, havei shvua. I made fun of some news outlets. I was careful not to say Haaretz before. So I know the old joke, are you allowed to take Haaretz into the bathroom, right? It was actually, I was reading something about taking Hebrew into a bathroom, and the question becomes, because of this Siman and Shulchan Aruch, can you take something written in Hebrew into the bathroom? I'm not dealing with halacha now. But what it says over here, if you take a little kid's notebook that has the Aleph Bet in it, and said, I swear, that's considered as if you use the name of God, because the letters know how to reform themselves into the name of God. And the letters of Hebrew, from Aleph to Tav, have power. I'm just saying, the letters have power. And fine, I quoted a mystical source that God speaks and creates out of these letters. This is a Shulchan Aruch. That if somebody holds up a kid's book with Aleph Bet in it, Sefer Chitzoni, you notice that? Secular Jewish wisdom, but it has the Aleph Bet. There's power to the Hebrew language, more so than we imagine. Now let's go back to some of the commentaries on the Sefer Yetzirah. In source number 8, and we're thinking back now about the Pei and the Ayin, not just the Aleph to Tav. And we read something interesting by the Ravid. V'nei hari'iyah, sight, Ayin, miyucheset l'Reuven, shenemar ki ra Hashem ba'onyai. Vishmiya l'Shem'on shenemar ki shema Hashem ki snua nochi. What a frightful commentary that is. It's telling us that seeing and hearing go back to this tragic relationship between Yaakov and Leah, where Leah feels so outcast, she feels hated. God, take a look, listen. And he says, all hearing and seeing go back to this dysfunctionality. It's really a frightening commentary. The Gra, in his commentary to the Sefer Yetzirah, will put things a little bit differently, but maybe then give us a little bit more of understanding. Re'iyah b'sivan. The Kol Ha'am Ro'im. Now that's a phenomenal interpretation. All sight is connected to a particular month. That month is Sivan. Because what happened in Sivan? Matan Torah. You're going to use this for Sivan. That we Kol Ha'am Ro'u Et HaKolot. We saw the sound. So again, with the Ayin and the Pei, we saw what God said. The Ayin and the Pei, by Matan Torah, become connected in such a profound way that they get merged together in an experience of total understanding, and more important than understanding, total connectedness between us and God. Kol ha'am ro'im et ha'kolot. So again, the Gra says, Re'iyah b'sivan v'chol ha'am ro'im, hiluch, walking, using the legs, b'tamuz. Bo, on this month, v'taka kaf yerech Yaakov, netzach. So just one more, I'm sorry for this, just one more Kabbalistic idea. The two legs are connected sometimes in Kabbalah to netzach and hod. The two legs are netzach and hod. And Yaakov is walking on this month, and he gets hurt on this month. What month does Yaakov get hurt in? What does it say? What month is it? Tammuz. Tammuz is when he's walking, which means Tammuz is when Yaakov is making his way to Eretz Yisrael. By the way, note also, Tammuz is the month where most of that month is when the spies are also making their way through Eretz Yisrael. The walking somehow gets hurt. Yaakov gets attacked on the way, and he gets hurt in his thigh. But it says, nonetheless, let's pay attention here. Hiluch betamuz v'takakaf yerech Yaakov netzach. But even though Yaakov is hurt, Yaakov gets a new name, Yisrael, and netzach Yisrael lo yishaker. By the way, that verse will be far more important than I'm letting on right now. Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker. Because of course, what is sheker? Sheker is the opposite of emet. And sheker ain lo raglayim. Good. And sheker and emet are opposites. But we're going to come back to that also. Yaakov ultimately, but titen emet Yaakov. And Yaakov is one that maybe we're not sure if he was always truthful. But Yaakov gets hurt, but nonetheless, this new part of Yaakov emerges, and that is Yisrael. And Netzach Yisrael, lo yishaker. And Am Yisrael will always survive. And sometimes we're going to get hurt, and sometimes we're going to limp, and sometimes it's going to be painful. But Netzach is forever. Netzach Yisrael, lo yishaker. And we're going to survive forever. He says that's connected to Tammuz. Shehol chubo hamaraglim eretz Yisrael. Ubo lechred begalut. Skip a little. That's the month they were walking as well. And then it continues and it says shmi'a be'av. But hearing is connected to av. Sheshamu el hamaraglim. Ubo metu kol ador asher shamu. But Av is where the hearing gets messed up, and the hearing is messed up because the Peh did not base itself upon the Ayin. And maybe these Kabbalistic ideas, which seem very, very far from us, are making a little bit more sense, or maybe there is somewhat of a framework that we could begin to understand it. In source number 10, when the spies come back, the people draw the conclusion from the false report. The opposite of the truth is understood, the Peh and the Ayin have been inverted, and the people come to the conclusion that God hates them. And that's where the Sin'ah comes into the entire narrative of the Meraglim. The people are convinced that God hates them, and that's why he wants to take us to Eretz Yisrael. Rashi will point out in Devarim that there's nothing further from the truth, that God loves us, and that's why he wants to take us to Eretz Yisrael. But you live in a world where the Peh and the Ayin are opposite. You live in this world where the narrative fits in to whatever it is that you want it to fit in. When you ignore the truth, which is absolute, manifest in front of you, you can come to all kinds of conclusions. But this idea of the Peh and the Ayin and the letters being messed up, it's not only connected to the sin of the spies. Of course, there's another sin, which is this other main sin that took place in the desert, which then also is connected to this process of the 3 weeks of Shavasu B'Tammuz and finally Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is mainly connected to the spies, while Shavasu B'Tammuz, the beginning of the end, is connected to the Chetah Egel. So if we look at the Midrash in source number 13, and now we'll be able to read things a little more carefully and with a little more understanding, I hope. V'yomer Shem Moshe pesol lecha. You know, it's time to make the luchot. Hadu dechtiv ve'eged lecha ta'alumot chachma. Ata motzi b'sha'a shamar lo kadosh baruch hu lech red ki shichet amcha. When God said to Moshe, go down, your people have sinned. Hayatofes b'luchot v'lo yama'amin shechatu Yisrael. By the way, I absolutely love that. Moshe was unwilling to believe the Jewish people sinned. How many of us are willing to believe any and every bad thing about the Jewish people? Moshe Rabbeinu had reasons to believe bad things. Moshe doesn't believe. Can't be true. It can't be true. If you ever had any doubts about Moshe Rabbeinu, just remember this part right here. God says to Moshe, they sinned, and Moshe is saying, that can't be true. But listen to the way that it's articulated. Amar im eini ro'eh, Einu ma'amin. It's not enough. You need to see it. The ayin has to come before the peh. And God is speaking. God is telling him they sinned. And he says, I have to see it. Seeing is believing. I can't believe that Am Yisrael sinned. Shenema v'yikashe karav Moshe el ha'machaneh shelo shivran ad shera'a be'inav. he did not break the luchot until he sees it with his own eyes. Yilam b'nei adam shehem idim ma she'inam ro'im. And yet, you know, there are people who are willing to testify that which they've never seen. And now as you're reading this, you realize that that same problem that we started with, the ayin and the pei and the narratives and the speech, it's right here staring at us in the same midrash, and even more so. Efshir shelo yamoshe ma'amin b'kodesh baruch hu, she'amar lo kishichet amcha. It's held it. This is God speaking. Is it possible he doesn't believe him? Elo di yamoshe derech eretz l'Israel. Moshe teaches nonetheless. This is derech eretz. Afilu she'adam shomea davar min yichidin eman. Even if you hear something from one person who has a great degree of reliability, asur lekabel eduto lasot davar al piv im einu ra'eh. You don't act until you actually see it for yourself, because testimony requires that you see it, not hearsay. This is an unbelievable midrash. I hope you understand how really special this is. Davar Acher, and this Davar Acher is just as important for us. Sheporchu haktufim min haluchot. The letters left. Which Matan Torah, the people saw the sound, they saw the words, they saw the letters, they saw what God was saying. I don't know how artists will depict seeing the sound. In my imagination, I would see the words, see the letters, and they're all spelled out. Anochi, they see Anochi spelled out. They hear it and they see it. They see the sounds. And now what happens, the reverse of this now takes place, and now there's almost an undoing of Matan Torah. At this point, the letters which they had seen, where there was this incredible unity between the peh and the ayin, God's word and man's eyes, at this point, God now takes back the letters. And now, in a sense, Matan Torah is undone. Ra Moshe shechatu v'shiberet luchot. And at this point, Moshe goes ahead and he breaks the luchot. And this is Tammuz. This is the month of Tammuz. The breaking of luchot, the sin of the egel, where the people, again, they reject what they saw. They reject God. They reject the miracles that had taken place for them. They reject Jewish history. But it's so interesting that the way the Midrash goes back to is our issue, focusing primarily upon the letters. At the very end of the Tochacha, in Bechukotai, in verse 14, Source 14 is a remarkable and difficult midrash, and the only thing I'll warn you about this agadah is it actually makes its way into a number of rishonim in terms of what halakha is. I know for a lot of people, what is agadah? It's non-legal. This agadah ends up becoming legal for, as I said, for a number of the rishonim. It also talks about letters, but it talks about letters in a different way. And again, there were so many more cases and examples and uses of letters that I got lost along the way that I decided not to include. The missing letter in Ashrei, the extra nuns that we have in Bamidbar, by the way, those nuns surround Vayhi ben Tsoa to travel. Nun, Samech, Ayin is the proper sequence. We were supposed to travel at that point to Eretz Israel. I saw that in the writings of the Baba Sali's father, Rav Abu Chatzera. Nasa. They were supposed to travel at that point to Eretz Israel, but the traveling got lost. The sequence got lost. We ended up not traveling at that point, and instead we ended up on a very long, very, very long journey. And the nuns are placed there out of the way. The Nasa didn't take place, at least at that point, the way it was supposed to. But one day it will. But of all the cases in the law, and again, also in Ashrei, we say, whoever says Ashrei every day is wonderful because they say the alphabet, but we all know, I think, that there's a letter which is missing. And that also is the nun. It's the falling down, the noflim. Somech Hashem l'kol noflim. We want to talk about instead about God picking up those that have fallen. But the falling we don't mention. Over here, let's read. Damar vacha b'Rabbi Chanina. This is Gemara in Shabbat. Me'olam lo yatsa midat tova mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'chazar b'lora. God never changed something from good to bad. Chutz. Except for this. Dichtiv, as it says in Yecheskel, Vayom Hashem elav avor betoch ha'ir betoch Yerushalayim v'hitveti tav. Now for us, the word tav can mean some kind of a note, or it can be the letter tav. He says, put a tav al mitzchot ha'anashim ha'nenachim v'nenakim al kol ha'tevot ha'nasot. What does that mean? Listen to the explanation. Amalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Gavriel, lech urshom al mitzchan shel tzadikim, tav shel dyo. On all of the righteous people, put a tav of ink, shelo yishlotu bo bahem malchei chabalah, that when the plague comes, it won't strike the righteous people. The righteous people will be spared. V'al mitzcham sharisha'im tav shel dam, but on the wicked people, put a mark of blood, kidei sheyishlotu bahem malchei chabalah, that when the plague comes, they'll be struck. And now you have an internal struggle, kivyachol, as it were, of God and himself. Amra midat ha-din lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Midat ha-din says to God, Ribono shel olam, Master of the Universe, ma nishtanu elu mi'elu? What is the difference between these people and these people? God says, what are you talking about? Amar lahem, and I would understand this is the midat harachamim, compassion. Amar lahem, halalu tzadikim gemurim. Now you can answer, why are you saying it's midat harachamim? Maybe it's midat adin, but midat adin is arguing. So why would midat adin argue that righteous people? But God says, halalu tzadikim gemurim, they're completely righteous. Valalu rishaim gemurim, and the others are completely wicked. Amar lahem, amar lefanav, God says, sorry, midat adin says to God, amar lefanav, ribonu shel olam, Master of the Universe, Hayabi Adam Limchot Velo Michu. They had an ability to say something, to protest, to try to inspire, to try to do something. By the way, if you're not going to get it, this is actually the Vav. The Vav is the connection. They had an ability, they had a responsibility to make some kind of a connection. Amarla, God responds and says to Midat Hadin, Galui v'yadua lefanai, she'im yimchu bahem lo yikablu bahem. God says, what are you talking about? I know 100% that had they tried and had they rebuked and had they said something, it would not have worked. Amra lefanav, Midat Hadin says back to Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ribonu shalolam, im lefanecha galu, you know the future. Lahem migalu, how did they know? They should have at least tried. This ends up becoming halacha. A number of the Rishonim bring this, that even if you know somebody's not going to respond, you still try. You know they're not going to, your next door neighbor, why don't you come for Kiddush this Friday night? They're not going to come. Does that take away your obligation to reaching out, creating that vav, creating that connection? If you say something to somebody who's not going to listen, so we would say, if we're going to talk about halacha, if they're going to slash your tires, you're not obligated to do it. If they're going to get all upset, you're not obligated to do it. But if you're going to reach out in some way and try, God says, I know they're not going to do it. And Midat Hadin says, yeah, but they didn't know that they're not going to work. They should have tried. V'hainu dichtiv, and this is absolutely frightening, and that's what it says there in Yecheskel, Zakan, Bechor, B'tula, V'taf, V'nashim, Tarogu l'mashchit, v'akol ish asher lev hatav al tikshu, and so on. V'chtiv, which means what ends up happening is that those that are innocent are just as guilty because they didn't even try. I'm going to say it again, the lack of connection. The lack of connection, sometimes the lack of caring, not always. Sometimes we care, but we don't try. But that trying, that connection, that vav is absolutely so essential. And now we can understand the end of the Tochacha. Because back in the Tochacha it says that the curses were the Vav and the He were inversed and the Aleph at Taf and so on. We look in source number 16. V'zacharti et briti Yaakov. And all of us should note that Yaakov is spelt a little funny in this place. V'yafet briti Yitzchak v'apriti Avraham yizkor v'aret yizkor. The day will come, I'm going to remember. Which means there's a promise. This was also mentioned in at least one of the keynote this morning, that there's a promise that there's going to be an end to the suffering, there's going to be an end to the disconnection, there's going to be an end to the lies. At some point, we're going to change the sequence and things are going to be healed. In this verse talking about the healing that will take place, Yaakov is spelt with an extra vav. Rashi notes, V'zacharti et briti Yaakov b'chemisha makomot nichtav malei. There are five places, if you search in Tanakh, you'll find that Yaakov is written malei with an extra vav. V'Eliyahu chaser b'chemisha makomot. And there are five places that Eliyahu is missing his vav. Yaakov natal ot mishmo shel Eliyahu. And Yaakov took away Eliyahu's vav. Aravon. He took it as collateral. Sheavo, that he comes one day, the Vaser Gulat Panav. And he goes and he tells us about the final Geula. And that vav, that kvav, that connection, that's the thing which is missing. The Shem Yishmuel, when he focuses on Eliyahu, and Eliyahu is eventually coming, he notes, of course, Eliyahu hu ish ha'emet. Eliyahu is a man of truth. Eliyahu is not the kind of person who paints things in a nice way and colors things in a nice way. Eliyahu is this midat ha'emet. He continues to tell us that this whole essence of the Geula is about emet somehow resurfacing and emet coming back. I told you before the problem with the pei and the ayin being inverted is that truth suffers, and the whole aleph bet gets hurt. But it has to come back. V'nei Yaakov hu amiti titen emet liYaakov, and therefore this whole idea of Yaakov's connection with Eliyahu all comes back to this point of emet. What happens when he comes back in Source 18? Hinei anochi sholeich lechem et Eliyah. Notice he's. His vav, we're not giving it to him. Hanavi lefnei bo yom agadol v'nara vehishiv levavot al banim velev banim al avotam. And what more basic connection can there possibly be? What more painful dysfunctionality can there be than parents and children who could become estranged? And Eliyahu is going to come with the vav and make those connections and bring people together. And when people are brought together, then we can speak about moving on to a messianic age. But again, the one thing which is still missing is this point of emet. In source number 20, and I brought this just to have somebody to say it, but it's pashut, it's the panim yafot. The panim yafot is the hafla, Rav Pinchas Alevi Horovitz, who's a wonderful person to bring. According to legend, he and his brother both learned by the Vilna Gaon, and learned by the Baal Shem Tov. Learned by both. So we learned, as I said, we brought something for the Vilna Gaon, soon we'll learn. He brings over here that Emet is the first, the middle, and the last letters of the alphabet. It's the whole alphabet becoming whole again. That's what Emet is. It's putting all the alphabet, and now you realize it's the Aleph-Bet which was hurt, and therefore it's inverse, and whether it's the Vav and the Hey, or whether it's the Pei or the Ayin, whether it's the lack of connection, Bein Adam L'Chavero, or the Vav, or whether it's the Pei and the Ayin telling over the false narrative, all of this could be fixed with Emet. Because what is Emet? Emet, parents and children are supposed to get along. Emet is, we are supposed to get along with our neighbors. Emet, it doesn't make a difference who's religious and who's not religious, even if we can possibly define all of those terms. And actually creating those terms as religious and non-religious is the biggest non-truth, because which ones of us are really religious and who's really not religious? I was once speaking to a group from South Africa, and South Africa kids are absolutely the best kids. And they came to like a 1 or 2 day program in the university, and I spoke to them, and they said to me, we're not religious. So I said, do you go to shul on Friday night? And I've been to South Africa enough times to know they all go to shul on Friday night. And they go, yeah. And I go, and do you daven when you go to shul? And they say, yeah. And do you listen to the rabbi's sermon? They even had to say, yeah. So I said, do you realize how much a pagan would make fun of you for being a religious fanatic? He goes, but we drive to shul. I go, yeah, but you go to shul. You're religious. Don't focus on that which you don't do. Focus on that what you do. A pagan will think that you're a hypocrite. You are religious. You don't do everything that fanatics like me do. Okay, get over it. And we're all works in progress. That's really what it comes down to. We're all works in progress. But those vavs, those connections, that's what's so essential to be making these connections. So I searched for source 21. It speaks to the wholeness of the heart. And again, I mentioned the very beginning, that story where the kid just says the aleph bet, and it works. In the Sefer Chassidim, now this is the real Chassidim, sorry, no offense to any, but this is the Chassidei Ashkenaz, Rav Yehuda Chassid, was born in 1150, died in 1217. The printed version is source 21, and the non-printed version is what's, and that's what I heard from Rabbi Soloveitchik once. It was somebody who wanted to pray, but he didn't know how to pray. So what's interesting, this is not the story of the Baal Shem Tov. It just happens to be 500 or so years earlier. V'kol yom haya omer, ribono shel olam, master of the universe, galui v'yadua lefanecha, she'ilu hayu lecha behemot v'donin li l'shomran, l'kol ani shomer b'schar, lecha hayiti shomer b'chinam. That was his prayer. Ki ani ohev otcha, because I love you. This is an unbelievable prayer. God, I'm a shepherd. Everybody else's sheep, I take money for. But if you wanted me to watch your sheep, I would do it for free because I love you. The story goes on to say that some rabbi heard this guy pray and told him he's an idiot and this is not how you pray. And he goes, you should never say a prayer again like this because it's foolish. And this is what you say. And he teaches him to say Shema, and he teaches him to say Shemon Esrei, which is very good. So after a couple of days, the guy stopped praying because he forgot the Shema and he forgot the Shemon Esrei and he didn't remember how to pray. And the guy told him not to say the other prayer. And God came to this chassid in the middle of the night and said, the prayer that made me happiest has stopped because of you. God said, I love that prayer. And you better find this guy and tell him to keep saying his prayer. In a footnote to the Sefer Chassidim over here, it tells the story of somebody who had converted during the Spanish-Portuguese Inquisitions, and he left Portugal, and he decided he wanted to become a Baal Tshuva and do things right, and he read the Torah, but he had no education. So he started to make the lechem, he started to make bread, like in the Beit HaMikdash, and put it in front of the Aron Kodesh. And the shamus in the shul would see bread every week, and he would take the bread and eat it. And the guy would think that God would eat it, and thought this was the silliest thing. And the same thing is brought in that story that the shamus then has a dream that God said, since the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, no one has done anything for me, which has been meaningful except for this guy. Which is really incredible, Musar, because we're actually the Sefer Chassidim, that the footnote came here, it talks about those of us who mess up the alphabet. Those of us who maybe can't daven really with perfect Hebrew because we don't know our diktuk well enough and we don't pronounce things exactly right and maybe our rashis don't work the way that they should. It's all over here in the first part of source 21. If you flabe nechal otana migam gamin velashon v'korin lechet hey v'leshin samech u'lekuf ted u'leresh dalet eich mitpalim eich korin b'torah v'om davish b'ktusha. It goes on to say God likes these. Because God looks after the pureness of heart, and the pureness of heart is really what's important. And we're very exacting, and therefore, people who can pray in very, very pure ways, we kind of chase them away. But this idea, then, still the Hasidic story that God then could just take the letters and magically put them back together again, I think we understand that a lot better right now. The letters have holiness to them. The letters in the proper sequence certainly have holiness. We don't even know what the proper sequence is sometimes. This deliberate changing of the pay and the ayin and creating a false narrative and telling things which aren't true, that's something which is absolutely spiritually debilitating because it causes us to live in a world of lies. What needs to be somehow to emerge is a world of truth. Eliyahu is the one who's going to bring us truth, and that's putting the alphabet back together, the aleph and the mem and the tav, and putting it back together again, and that's the truth. And the truth is connected to Yaakov, and it's Yaakov's netzach, and Yaakov may hurt his leg, but netzach Yisrael lo yishaker. And correct it's completely appropriate. In a book which is called the Otiyot of Rabbi Akiva, it points out that the letters of emet all have two legs on them. Each aleph and mem and tav, each have two legs. And sheker, in lo raglayim, they only have regel achad. The shin stands on one. Kuf, the resh. Each of them stand in one level. The sheker in raglayim yesh regla. That means sheker is something which is actually, it teeters. And we just got to push it down, it's going to fall. Emet is so much stronger. But unfortunately, we live in a world which is full of so much lies. But Eliyahu is going to have to come and teach us truth. But I want to end with one last story. And the last story is the story about the truth of Eliyahu and how we're sometimes sitting and waiting for Eliyahu to bring all the truth. And I saw various versions of the story, so I didn't know which one to use, and that's why you didn't get it, aside from my code of honor of keeping you only to four pages. So here is a story about Eliyahu. Once upon a time, there was a very wealthy individual who wanted nothing more than to meet Eliyahu HaNavi. And he goes to his Rebbe. You can fill in for any blank that you want now. You get to decide who the hero is. And he goes to his Rebbe and he says, I want to meet Eliyahu. He goes, why can't I meet Eliyahu? You know, there's stories of various tzaddikim who have a giloy Eliyahu, meet Eliyahu. I want to meet Eliyahu. So he says, you want to really meet Eliyahu? He goes, yeah, I really want to meet Eliyahu. He says, okay, do the following. A couple of weeks from now is going to be Pesach. He goes, Pesach, that's the worst. Every year I open up the door waiting for Eliyahu. Eliyahu's never there. He goes, no, this is what you'll do this Pesach if you want to see Eliyahu. Pack up, he's a wealthy fellow, pack up a whole wagon full of food. With food and drink and meat and everything that you'll need for the holiday. For 2 days of the holiday. Remember in Chutz Lars, you still have 2 days. Pack up the wagon for 2 days of holiday. Travel to this place outside of the town. There's a road. You're going to keep on traveling the road. There's a little shack there. Go there before the Chag. Knock on the door. You'll see Eliyahu. You'll meet Eliyahu. He ends up getting lost. He gets there right before the Chag. He knocks on the door and he says, this Jewish couple, bunch of kids, can I come for Pesach? And they look at him and said, you're welcome to come. We just don't have any food. And he says, no problem. I have all the food. But he just wants to, he's looking around. He wants to see Eliyahu. Maybe this guy's Eliyahu. He's looking. Come in. He comes in, brings his food, spends the first day. He's waiting for Eliyahu to say some kind of words of wisdom, but Eliyahu's an Am Haaretz. And Eliyahu doesn't have very much to say. But Eliyahu's enjoying the food. And the kids are enjoying the food, and his wife is enjoying, everybody's enjoying the food. And then the second, they open up the door, Eliyahu's not there. So he says, okay, maybe it's the second day. Maybe on the first day, Eliyahu's in Eretz Yisrael, and the second day, Eliyahu comes to Chutz La'aretz. So we go through the whole thing again. On the second day, he asks, can I open the only thing I want? Can I open the door? Sure. Opens the door. Eliyahu's not there. The Chag ends. He goes back home and he sees this Rebbe who sent him and he says to him, I don't know what you put me through, but there was no Eliyahu over there. So the Rebbe said, go back. Go travel back to the same place. But instead of at the very end making a right turn, make a left turn. Fine. He goes back, travels all the way back, and he sees the Balabayas, the guy who hosted him, he sees the guy sitting there with a bunch of his friends. And he says to me, you'll never understand what happened. We had no food. And Eliyahu HaNavi came and brought us food. Eliyahu HaNavi came and brought us food. And he brought us wine. And he brought us meat. And we spent Pesach with Eliyahu HaNavi. So maybe, instead of all of us waiting for Eliyahu to come, maybe all of us need a little bit to impersonate Eliyahu HaNavi and take that vav back from Yaakov, create these connections, make the alphabet complete, and make this world a world of truth.